Well, just over the past week, it's not so much the data as, you know, concerns about President Trump's policy programs and the way in which that's developing. It's very, very erratic, you know, in the way in which he's thinking about announcing tariffs and the pattern of those. And, of course, you've got Elon Musk's Doge, which is cutting a swathe now through the government sector. And you can see that probably in the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey. We got the final result of that for February right at the end of last week. And it's an interesting one because if you went back a month ago, it was 71.1 for the Consumer Sentiment Survey. When we did the, or when they did the first part of that survey at the beginning of the month, it came in at 67.8, so it was down. Yeah, there's an expectation it might hold around that at 67.8. It didn't. It went down further to 64.7. So remembering that it's consumer spending, which is the mainstay of the strength in the U.S. economy, there's just a hint that that may be starting to be damaged by the economic policy announcements which are coming through and the way in which they're trying to contain government. Abstracting from that, the data is still mostly okay. We had two, and particularly so in the manufacturing sector, so that's the one area that is sort of tending to benefit. We had the February Empire State Survey came out, and that's for New York State, and it went from minus 12.6 to the February reading of plus 5.7, so that's a pretty significant improvement. Having said that, the Philadelphia Fed survey, which had a huge bounce the month before to plus 44.3, obviously couldn't sustain that and came in at plus 18.1, but it still means there's more optimists than pessimists running through that survey as well. Initial jobless claims are still holding very, very low, notwithstanding the axe which is going through government, and that came in at 219,000 from 214,000. That's still consistent with quite a deal of strength running through non-farm payrolls when they come out. But we've also got just some softness running through the housing sector. We had a fair bit of housing data last week, and amongst those was the February National Association of Home Builders Index. It was at 47 last month, and it had been improving a little over recent months. It was expected to come back a little bit to 46. It actually went down to 42. So, that's actually a relatively weak result. We had home building permits. They went the other way, so they were down 0.7% going back to December. Improved a bit by 0.1%, not much. But housing starts, which had a huge rise the month before in December, up 16.1%, came down by 9.8%. What I should say is that when you draw a line through what's been happening through housing starts in the US, it's still a housing market which is turning up when you look at the trend that's running through it. So, that's still looking reasonably good when we look at that running through. Moving through to this week, and I think most of the attention will be looking at inflation indicators, and we've got the January core personal consumption expenditure deflator coming out on Friday. CPI, you may remember, went from 2.9 to 3% for the most recent reading. That was only at 2.4% going back to the middle of last year, and core inflation's up at 3.3. So people will be watching the core PC, which is often preferred by the Fed as an indication of inflation. And it looks as if it'll come in at least 0.3% for the month, and that would drive up the annual rate of change probably from 2.8 to 2.9, maybe even higher. And so it's that drift up in inflation which is starting to put a brake on what the Fed can do. You know, obviously, the market's in two minds because whenever it sees anything which is slightly weaker relating to the economy, there's a hint that they might be able to rally bonds a little bit. But then you get these inflation reminders that the Fed not only can't do anything with interest rates for quite a while now, but at worst, the next move by the Fed could be the beginnings of the next tightening cycle. And so that's something which is running there because of the way in which inflation's moving in the US. Some of the other indicators we're just watching through the course of this week, we get another look at how the consumers think they're performing. We get February consumer confidence. That comes out on Tuesday. This is the Conference Board survey. It was at 104.1 going back to the month of January, remembering that late last year we got up above 110, so it has been coming back a bit, and they expect that to come in around about 103.3. We get some more housing data, we get things like January new home sales coming out on Wednesday. They're expected to fall about 3% after being up 3.6% the month before. We get pending home sales too, which are expected to come back by 1.3%. They were down 5.5%, so there's a hint there of some softness ahead. But also right at the end of the week, we get things like January personal income, personal spending. And personal income looks as if it'll rise about 0.3% after rising 0.4%. And personal spending probably up about 0.2 after being up 0.7 the month before. It's the strength running through income growth in the US, which is one reason why, you know, some of these signs of softness might not go too far. And to put, you know, some context on that, you know, real wage growth in the US has been positive for over a year now and is getting stronger. Going back last month, real wage growth, that's after allowing for inflation, is running around about 1.2, 1.3% year on year. And if anything, that's getting stronger still. So it's one of the key reasons why it's hard to write off the US, although it does come, you know, obviously, with some inflation risk that runs through that. Obviously, we have to allow for erratic announcements from President Trump too, which, if anything, are becoming more erratic and less sensible. And so there's some risks that are involved in that, which the market is responding to from time to time. Moving to China, you know, we really haven't had a lot of data running through China because we've had Chinese New Year, which takes out most of the regular indicators that we see. But one that did come out last week was house prices for the month of January. They are down 5% year-on-year. Well, that looks a little bit better than 5.3% down going back the month before. It's still down, though, and a long way. And you know, this is the key problem for the Chinese. Normally, when the economy is languishing, you know, they can boost output and particularly push it out into export markets. Of course, global trade is now being threatened by these tariffs. And so that's where it's very, very hard for China to grow its economy out the way it has in the past. It has to do something about its own consumers. And its own consumers are still beset by these problems that are running through the housing sector, where prices are still falling. And you know, that's keeping people pretty glum. It means that whenever they can, they save more rather than spend. And that's what the Chinese authorities got to tackle, and they haven't been. So at some point, you know, there's hope that they might get a policy initiative which will work towards getting their own consumers to spend more and save less, but it's not there yet. And last week, you know, People's Bank of China met, not that interest rates matter that much in China, but they just left things unchanged. So 3.6% for their deposit rate, same as the month before. So no real change running through the policy prescription, but there's a hope that something may at some point. Now, moving to this week, we get on Friday the latest manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMIs. Going back last month, you know, manufacturing PMI was still sitting just a little bit below 50 at 49.1. And the non-manufacturing PMI a little bit above at 50.2. So, yeah, they're just hovering around the expansion contraction marker at 50. There's some hope that the manufacturing PMI might get to 50 and the non-manufacturing PMI might just edge up a notch, perhaps to 50.3. Moving to Australia last week, and of course we had the RBA decision. There was a cut and 25 basis points, taking the cash rate down to 4.1%. But you'd have to say that everything that both the governor said and was there in the monetary policy statement hints at, well, this is a very line ball cut and we're in no rush to do anything else after this, because that was there in chapter and verse in everything that Michelle Bullock was saying, but it certainly was there in the monetary policy statement that came out and the way they changed their forecasts. They really did make the labour market look a lot tighter all the way through the forecasts. You know, in earlier forecasts, They had the unemployment rate going up this year to 4.5 and holding at 4.5. It only goes up to 4.2%, and they had to lift their employment growth forecast enormously. And this also cascaded through to the inflation outlook. And whereas in earlier forecasts they had the inflation rate getting down both for the headline and the CPI to 2.5%, middle of their target range, and holding there in the second half of 2026 going into 2027, they've lifted that 0.2 in these forecasts. Now, it's extraordinary that they actually eased when they lifted their longer-term inflation outlook. Sure, to 2.7%. It's above that middle of the 2-3% band. And interestingly, although it's an assumption, they put an assumption about what may happen with the cash rate, and they say, you know, it's related to what the market's saying. But this is the first time that the cash rate, barely any movement in it from the 4.1 that they've got all the way through this year. And then they've got it actually lifting slightly as they go into 2026 and 2027. So there's the first hint that, you know, that they're looking ahead to potential for interest rates to go back up again. So it was a very, very interesting change that we got there. Now, having said that, the very next day we got the wage price index came out. That was a little bit better than expected in terms of not quite as high as expected. It was 0.7% quarter on quarter. And the annual rate came down to 3.2% from 3.6%. But the previous quarter was revised upwards. And so Q3 was revised up from 0.8 to 0.9, and the annual rate from 3.5 to 3.6. Also, we know that there's an awful lot of enterprise bargaining agreements, particularly in the public sector, which are just chock-a-block waiting to be resolved. You know, not least of these are things like train drivers in New South Wales, nurses in every single state, police in most states. And at some point, they are going to be resolved, and they won't be resolved at around the 3% mark for the wage increases over the next few years. It will be closer to 4%. And so, you know, that's where, you know, the pressure points are there when we look ahead. And then the very next day, we got why, you know, even though they revised tighter the labour market in the monetary policy statement, already it looks as if they haven't tightened that up enough, because we had the labour market data. Employment rose by 44,000 for the most recent month, more than double expectations. Full-time employment was up 54,100 in January. And the previous month, which was already a hefty 56,300, was revised up to plus 60,000. So in just 2 months, we've put on 104,000 jobs. The participation rate went up to 67.3, a new record high. And as a result of that, the unemployment rate just ticked up slightly to 4.1% from 4.0%. But it's still sitting below their revised 4.2% that they're expecting for around this time. So all told, we've still got these pressure points which are running through locally. And then to add to all this, the spending announcements from the government are coming thick and fast now. Just over the past 2 weeks, there's been $20 billion worth of new spending initiatives. Some of that related to the Bruce Highway up in Queensland to try and get the marginal electorates on side there. $8 billion there. Another $8 billion for the Medicare changes, which the opposition says it will match as well. And on top of that, more than $2 billion bailout for the Whyalla steel mill. So, you know, it's almost, you know, these are the other pressure points. Already very, very strong public sector spending. Looks as if it's going to be even stronger still. Admittedly, in our part of the world, we did have the RBNZ too. They had their meeting, and they dropped their cash rate by 50 basis points down to 3.75%. But it's worthwhile remembering that New Zealand is in dead-set recession. We're not. We're actually marking ahead. we're very much supported by public sector spending, and private sector spending is actually showing some signs of lifting too. Also, our unemployment rate is sitting 2 percentage points below the New Zealand unemployment rate. So it's very, very different what they're facing in New Zealand relative to here. This week in Australia, we get some more Q4 data, which will have some impact running into GDP data, which have come the week after. We've got on Wednesday fourth quarter construction work done. It looks as if it'll rise another 1%. It rose 1% going back the quarter before. Also on the same day, we'll get the January CPI, the January weighted mean CPI. And this one could be interesting because it could be the first sign that the CPI is starting its lift. And there was a hint of that even last month in December. Whilst we had the quarterly CPI, which came in at 2.4% year-on-year, the monthly CPI actually lifted from 2.4% to 2.5%. And the expectation is it'll lift further to 2.6% with the January CPI. So it's just starting that rise, much as we saw in the US and saw also in Europe, where inflation rates got to a low point and then started to rise. We may see the very first signs of that starting to occur in the data that we see here this week. On Thursday, we get private new capital expenditure. This is the missing piece, really, from Australia's economic growth story. We haven't had strong growth in private new capital expenditure, and the cost of that means that firms are largely over-employing people rather than investing in new plant machinery. And that is problematic because it means that productivity is just shot when we're doing that. It's another one of those pressure points as we look ahead. Well, private new capex, it may lift, we think, about 0.6% after being up 1.1%, but it needs to lift a lot more than that over the course of the next period. And finally, just looking at Europe, it's still very, very flat there. We got the manufacturing and services sector PMI, and in February, the manufacturing PMI, it lifted a little, the 47.3 from 46.6, but it's still sitting well short of 50. And the services sector PMI, which had been very strong in Europe, is now fading, and it came back from 51.3 down to 50.7. Interestingly, the trade balance is going sideways now on a month-to-month basis, which you'd expect with all the pressures that are running through trade. So their trade surplus actually came down a touch to 15.5 billion euro for the most recent month from 16. To the extent there's any improvement at all in Europe, we had consumer confidence, which went from minus 14.2 to minus 13.6. It's still very much in negative territory, but Europe basically is just flatlining at the moment, and is flatlining around zero GDP growth on a quarterly basis. So still very, very weak as far as Europe's concerned. But this week, any more announcements from President Trump now tending to focus more. When President Trump first came to power, which it seems like ages ago, but it's not much more than a month ago, the market was glass half full. They were looking at reducing regulation, lower taxes as a reason to buy risk assets. Now they're looking at the negative side, the disruption that comes from the Trump administration, both in terms of government spending and also when you're looking at the risks that come from selective and strange reasons for putting tariffs on other countries. And so that part of the policy program is now starting to worry, even though the economy is still sort of muddling along. We did have very overvalued markets in the US, and it's just starting to show signs of working its way back.